TED Audio Collective.
This conversation on coronavirus features epidemiologist David Heyman with TED Current Affairs curator Whitney Pennington Rogers, recorded live in the TED World Theater on February 27th, 2020.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Support for TED Talks Daily comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/TED Talks. That's odoo.com/TED Talks. Odoo, modern management made simple. This show is brought to you by Schwab. You're here to keep a pulse on environmental trends. Well, now you can invest in what's trending in electric vehicles, renewable energy, water sustainability, and more with Schwab Investing Themes. It's an easy way to invest in ideas you believe in. Schwab's research uncovers emerging trends, then their technology curates relevant stocks into themes. Choose from over 40 themes. Buy all the stocks in a theme as is or customize to better fit your investing goals. All in a few clicks. Schwab Investing Themes is not intended to be investment advice or a recommendation of any stock or investment strategy. Learn more at schwab.com/thematic investing.
Like TED Talks? You should check out the TED Radio Hour with NPR. Stay tuned after this talk to hear a sneak peek of this week's episode.
The subject that we're tackling today is the coronavirus. As of today, at 9:13 a.m. Eastern Time, there are 82,548 confirmed cases worldwide, and 2,810 deaths from the virus. So we have a question right here.
Hi, Dr. Heyman. Can you walk us through the symptoms, like what the experience is, and then the recovery?
This looks like a very mild disease, like a common cold, in the majority of people. There are certain people who get infected and have very serious illness. Among them are health workers. It's a very serious infection in them as they get a higher dose than normal people, and at the same time, they have no immunity. So in the general population, it's likely that the dose of virus that you receive when you are infected is much less than the dose that a health worker would receive, health workers having more serious infections. So your infection would be less serious, hopefully. So that leaves the elderly and those with comorbidities to really be the ones that we have to make sure are taken care of in hospitals.
We're seeing that there are a large number of cases, but a smaller number of people who end up dying from the infection. And what would you say are the most vulnerable communities? Who are the people that need to be most concerned about this?
Well, the most concerned are people who are, first of all, in developing countries and who don't have access to good medical care and may not have access at all to a hospital should an epidemic occur in their country. Those people would be at great risk, especially the elderly. Elderly in all populations are at risk, but especially those who can't get to oxygen. In industrialized countries, it's the very elderly who have comorbidities, who have diabetes, who have other diseases, who are at risk. The general population doesn't appear to be at great risk.
Easily accessible information that's out there lists heart disease and diabetes as the primary comorbidities to be concerned about, but I'm curious if there are other ones that we should be aware of and thinking about.
First of all, pulmonary disease existing as a comorbidity is also important. In general, the elderly are at greater risk, especially those over 70, because their immune systems are not as effective as they might have once been, and they're more susceptible to infections. In addition, in some instances in China, there's been a co-infection with influenza, and at the same time, there have been some bacterial superinfections on the pneumonias that are occurring.
Are there certain places that you would suggest we all look so that we can keep track of how the virus is spreading?
the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta keeps track and has updates on a regular basis on its website. Also, the World Health Organization in Geneva, which is coordinating many of the activities going on internationally, also has a website with daily updates. It's our responsibility to get that information as individuals so we understand and can make sure that we can contribute in our own way to prevention of major spread.
You led the World Health Organization's response to the SARS outbreak. You know, I think that one thing that's interesting is when we talk about COVID-19 and the things we're hearing is that, oh, it's not as bad as SARS. You also hear that the death toll is higher. And so why is it so difficult for us to understand COVID-19? What makes it so challenging and why are there these conflicting reports?
It's the same problem with all new infections. This is an infection that's come into humans who have never been exposed to this virus before. They don't have any antibody protection, and it's not clear whether their immune system can handle this virus or not. This is a virus that usually finds itself in bats or in other animals, and all of a sudden it's in humans. And humans just don't have experience with this virus. But gradually we are beginning to learn a lot, as we did with SARS. And, you know, there are certainly a larger number of deaths than there were with SARS, but when you divide that by a denominator of persons who are infected, there are many, many more persons infected than there were with SARS. The case fatality ratio, that is the ratio of deaths to the numbers of cases in SARS, was about 10%. With the current coronavirus, COVID-19, is 2% or probably less. So it's a much less virulent virus, but it's still a virus that causes mortality, and that's what we don't want entering human populations.
My question is, despite the advancements and lessons learned in outbreaks, it seems the global community did not effectively coordinate the cross-border screening. And in the first few weeks, it seems that many airports were not prepared to screen people. How can we move from a reactive to a proactive approach in future cases?
It's clearly understood that airports or any land borders cannot prevent a disease from entering. People in the incubation period can cross that border, can enter countries, and can then infect others when they become sick. So its borders are not a means of preventing infections from entering a country by checking temperatures. Borders are important because you can provide to people arriving from areas that might be at risk of having had infection, providing them with an understanding, either a printed understanding or a verbal understanding, of what the signs and symptoms are of this infection and what they should do if they feel that they might be infected.
What do you think is the real timeline that we're looking at for a vaccine that might actually be available to all of us?
Vaccines are under development right now. There's a lot of research going on. That research requires first that the vaccine be developed, then that it be studied for safety and effectiveness in animals who are challenged with the virus after they're vaccinated, and then it must go into human studies. The animal studies have not yet begun, but will soon begin for certain vaccines. And it's thought that by the end of the year or early next year, there may be some candidate vaccines that can then be studied for licensing by regulatory agencies. So we're talking about at least a year until there's vaccine available that can be used in many populations.
And it sounds like right now there's still a lot of questions that are remaining about the transmission then. Those questions that we need to be asking are still unanswered.
It's clear. We know how it transmits. We don't know how easily it transmits in humans, in communities or in unenclosed areas. We know, for example, that in the enclosed area of a cruise ship, it spread very easily. We need to better understand how it will spread once it gets into more open areas where people are exposed to people who might be sick.
Could you talk, I guess, a little bit more about not just what we've been getting right with our global response to COVID-19, but what are some things that really need to be improved upon?
A major problem in the world today is that we look at outbreaks in developing countries as something that we need to go and stop. So when there's an outbreak of Ebola, we think, how can we go and stop this outbreak in the country? We don't think about how can we help that country strengthen its capacities so that it can detect and respond to infections. So we haven't invested enough in helping countries develop their core capacity in public health. What we've done is invested in many mechanisms globally, which can provide support to other countries to go and help stop outbreaks. But we want to see a world where every country can do its best to stop its own outbreaks.
It's hard to know what the future holds, but if you had to think about, you know, what lies ahead for emerging infections, especially as you think about the state of the planet right now, how many people are living here, the nature of travel. Are we more susceptible to these sorts of outbreaks now? Or, you know, what do you think is the future state of emerging infections going to be?
Today, there are over 7 billion people. And when those people come into the world, they demand more food, they demand a whole series of things, and they live closer together. In fact, we're an urban world where people live in urban areas. And at the same time, we're growing more animals, and those animals are contributing food to humans as well. So what we see is that that animal-human interface is becoming closer and closer together. And this intensive agriculture of animals and this intensive increase in human populations living together on the same planet is really a melting pot where outbreaks can occur and do occur. We will eventually have more and more of these outbreaks. So an emerging infection today is just a warning of what will happen in the future. We have to make sure that that technical collaboration in the world is there to work together to make sure that we can understand these outbreaks when they occur and rapidly provide the information necessary to control them.
The World Health Organization's Director General said that this has pandemic potential. And so do you feel that we're at a place right now where the worst of this is yet to come? Is the worst behind us? Where are we when you think about that?
I can't predict with accuracy. So all I can say is that we must all be prepared for the worst case scenario and at the same time learn how we can protect ourselves and protect others should we become a part of that epidemic.
20 years ago, Jimmy Wales founded Wikipedia as a place for everyone to share information. But he wasn't exactly sure how to run the site.
How do you put together a system that will generate a reasonable degree of quality and, you know, be open?
Ideas about building communities, online and off. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen to the TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.